In this edition of Facilitating the Mission, Jeff and I continue a conversation we began in the previous podcast. One of the most important pieces of the short-term mission trip is connecting Christians in the country you're visiting to short-term team members from America. While evangelism, outreach, and other ministry is important, the best way for disciples to grow on these trips is to create situations and circumstances where short-term missionaries bond with their international brothers and sisters. This non-negotiable with you as a ministry leader to include the nationals with the traveling Americans. And I wasn't planning on telling this story, but when I went through missions training in Tijuana that you led, The beautiful part of the training was that you integrated the American team with local church and church members in Tijuana, and we trainees had to live with these nationals. And my son and I, We lived with a family that had migrated from southern Mexico to Tijuana for work, and none of them knew any English. Mm. And so we depended on my Southern California Spanish, my 2 years of high school Spanish to get by with this couple. And my son and I, is 28 now, he's probably 14 at the time, so half his life ago, we really, really connected with that family and also connected with, you know, the other team members so much so that we're all still loosely connected, you know, through social media and things like that. And when you say that, you know, everybody on the team was crying at the end of the trip, I mean, you have bonded and done things together for the Lord that you've just never done those things with anybody else. Yes. And they've never done those things with anybody else.
Right.
And is one of the single most unique experiences that you've shared. For anybody listening to this, it's always crucial to include the Americans with the nationals and to do ministry together. And if I could just take that one step further and add another story, you know, I've done some work with some folks that traveled regularly to Cambodia.
Yes.
And so we were traveling in Cambodia and we were working with an evangelist, a Cambodian Christian leader named Satan Lee. And I want to say Kampuchea for Christ. Kampuchea is the ethnic word for Cambodia.
Yes.
We were working with pastors who were former Khmer Rouge. And probably should put a link, you know, for those, you know, that are a little younger, what Khmer Rouge is, and maybe even some movies that they can look at. Actually, there's a movie on, I think, Netflix right now that's about, you know, Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge communist war and things like that. But anyway, it was just amazing to hear their stories as they've come out of, you know, a militant communist movement.
Yes.
Become Christians and then to go and evangelize other Cambodians was just a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, it is, and it's one of the things that, again, as part of our, you know, training a team of Americans where we're so task oriented into, hey, you're going into a relational context where time isn't what's most important; it's the event, it's the depth of relationship, and it's one of the things that I tell, you know, I tell the team and I try to get people to understand, look, the success of your trip is not what you do. It's not how many outreaches you did. It's not how many people come to the Lord. The success of your trip is how deep do you have relationships with either the Christians you were working with there or the people you connected with that live there that maybe aren't believers. How much do you know about them? How much do they know about you? You know, it's not measurable, which is what drives us nuts as Americans. But the reality of it is, you know, success on the field for a short-term mission team is not measured by tasks accomplished. It's measured by depth of relationship. In fact, you probably remember that story or and the emphasis I told back in the day when you were at the training, and I do this all the time, where, you know, one of the biggest train wrecks for short-term mission teams from the West, especially America and Canada, is like these construction teams that go build a building or whatever. And the idea is, well, we're going to work alongside the nationals in building a, you know, a church building or whatever. And then you, you know, within an hour and a half, the Nationals want to take a coffee break and talk for an hour and find out about your family and everything back home. And the Americans are itching to get back to work. And there's this constant tension of the Americans are there, are thinking we're here to accomplish this task. And these people just want to sit around and have coffee and talk. And by the end of the trip, you have this crazy division of what just took place. And the division is the local people are saying, you know, these, the American team, they don't really care about us. They just want to build things and get things done. And then the American team is, well, no wonder this country is so screwed up and nothing's ever finished or completed. All the people want to do is sit around and talk. And so, you know, without preparation of the American team for how things are done there and what really matters, you know, you can actually produce a division rather than a unity.
When you do figure out the process of how they do construction in different places, and it seems like America is the only place that does construction the way construction is done in the world.
Yes.
But then you go someplace else. I mean, it's unbelievable the relationships that you can develop. I can remember one time I had to build a brick wall in South Sudan, and in, you know, the only thing I've ever done before is like go to Home Depot or go to the hardware store and look at the price on the shelf, and that's the price.
Right.
But, you know, when you when you're building a brick wall in South Sudan, you got to go down to the river and you have to, you know, get a bunch of dirt and you have to buy it from somebody down there that is really going to, you know, dig it out of a hole, but you have to negotiate for that. And, you know, you're having lunch together and before you know it, you've made a new friend. Not a lot of work has got done that day, but, you know, everything happens around, you know, the people that you work with and those meals that you take together. And that is how the whole community is held together. It's not held together by bricks and mortar.
Exactly. So it's a beautiful thing. Once you start, you know, once you start thinking back on the teams that you were part of and, or hosted, you know, I mean, you get, then all of a sudden, like your mind gets flooded with all these specific moments, you know, on these teams. And the other thing that I found interesting too, was how different personality types of the American team connected with different personality types of my church members. So sometimes you know, I thought this person, as I got to know the American, you know, cause we pick them up at the airport and I do their orientation and we have lunch, dinner and all that. And I'm, you know, and I kind of get to know the team. I have them each kind of tell me their short story in front of everybody else. And then I think, well, this person would be a perfect connection for this person in my church. But then when you let things just unfold, you put them into a context where, you know, they're free to interact. It's funny, the different personalities connect with people that are different from them. And then they bond. And so by the end of the trip, you're thinking, man, those are the last two people that I thought would have connected at that level, but they did. And so many times, of course, this was before the internet. So, you know, so many times we had those guys that left, the American teams, they literally were writing old school mail letters back to the people in our church. They were swapping mail through the regular mail service. And nowadays I can't, you know, I mean, I've done a few since the internet's been around. But yeah, they connect now over the internet. They stay connected by email, by Facebook and stuff. And again, it's just the body of Christ and its diversity unified is a beautiful thing.
Just to talk about, you know, relationships and how they're expressed, you know, in some of these cultures versus how they are in America. That first trip that I took to South Sudan, Jeff, it started in Uganda. And a lot of the way, you know, people interact with each other is the same, but one of the most unusual things, and I will be as tactful as I can possibly be here.
Okay.
One of the most unusual things that I saw was men holding hands with each other.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Somebody needed to warn me about that as I am, you know, hypersensitive, you know, overly, you know, egotistical macho guy. To a fault. Yes. Again, how to be tactful, I'm not sure. But, and so, you know, the first time you see that, you know, you ask some questions that are not, you know, as politically correct now as they were then, or however you want to say that. And but the thing that for me, as I started to connect with Africans, and I'm walking down the road with them, you're walking next to this giant of a man that is a soldier and has been a, you know, he's been a soldier since he was a boy, literally, in Africa. And you've connected with him so well that, you know, you feel his hand slip into your hand. And before you know it, you're holding hands with, you know, somebody that you've really bonded with. And it's weird on one hand, but on the other hand, I'm saying hand way too much. it's a privilege that you've connected at a level that you've got real friends now, and they're treating you like the friends that they have, you know, that they grew up with and things like that. And for me, that's one of the hugest things about connecting with locals. You know, we think so much that a mission trip is about, you know, how many souls do you save, which I think is important.
Right.
But what happens after you get saved? What happens after you get saved? What happens after the person you're connected with gets saved? How do you interact? It's like getting saved is just the beginning of your earthly relationship with other Christians and the people that you do ministry with. And so, you know, the whole idea of American Christians and international Christians connecting together in ministry and real brotherhood is the hugest takeaway. And like you said, you can't measure that because we can't even conceive of it really until we start to walk in it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then I always think about Jesus, you know, in John 17, talking about, you know, around verse 20 or so. And he talks about, you know, he's praying for them, for his followers, both the ones that were listening and then the ones that were going to come to know him through them. You know, and he makes the point, Father, that they may be in you, in me, as you are in me, and that together, you know, they would be unified. And then twice he says that unity tells the world that Jesus has been sent. And so Jesus, you know, what he does there is he's basically saying, look, the world's ability to comprehend that God sent his son into our world hinges at some level on the unity of his people, of those that have come to know him through Jesus. And when you get a team of Americans that really connect relationally with, you know, people from another culture and another country, different language, certainly different background, growing up and so forth, and they really love one another and they work together, I think, man, that just proclaims to the unbelievers that there's something, yeah, that God, only God could bring unity from people that are so radically diverse. There must have been something he did to accomplish that. Well, yeah, he sent his son.
And the operative word there is radically diverse, yeah. Not just Americans and, you know, foreigners. It's other ethnic groups and other ethnic groups.
Yes.
Because so many ethnic groups, when you get out into the world, they're enemies.
Yes, that's right.
And the gospel really has the ability to bring them together. No more do you see that than a place like when we were in South Sudan, you have all of these tribes that literally hate each other and at war with each other, but they have to come together and fight a threat from the north and from their government at the time. And they were, you know, in incredible disarray as a fighting force. But, and this is just the weirdest thing, but when the chaplaincy program was introduced and the gospel was introduced, it really had a way of bringing people together.
Yes.
You know, and that's not to make a case for war or for pacifism. It's just the fact that the gospel was introduced into a chaotic situation and it brought unity and it brought relationship and it brought bond.
Yes. And what I found is, and again, I think this is just a principle that God's kingdom operates by, is when people from different, you know, ethnically diverse people when they come together, not just to be together, where the goal isn't just to have unity, but the goal is you're unified to accomplish a purpose larger than your own interests. When you come side by side with somebody from another country and culture, and the reason for your being joined together, yeah, you're joined together because you love Jesus, but you also have this shared desire to be Jesus' hands and feet. And now you serve together, side by side, other people and meeting the needs of others. That's where the real connection happens. And I think where the real testimony is, you know, I tell churches when I do the short-term team training, you know, every church has a fellowship hall. And, you know, our definition of fellowship is we sit around and eat food together. And the idea is that, yeah, there's a level of fellowship there, but true fellowship in a local church is always found among the people that selflessly serve alongside other people. And short-term teams are sort of the pinnacle of that. If there's a group of people in a church, 100, a 200, 300, 400 member church or more, and a dozen people go on a short-term trip, those dozen people have had a shared experience of self-denial, self-sacrifice, serving others. And when they come back, they're going to have a level of relational connection with one another that nothing else in the church matches. So again, that's another benefit of short-term teams.
Yeah, I think just a little funny joke came to mind as you were saying that. I think that short-term trips prepare people for the kind of relationship that we're going to have in heaven with one another better than our, you know, our regular American church fellowship. I think a lot of people from America are going to be surprised when they get to heaven. They see that there's not a bunch of paper plates and sweet tea and you know. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, and one of the ways you know that's seen is even in the language. You know, where a lot of depending on which version of the Bible you see, but in Philippians 1, where Paul's writing to the church there in verses like 3, 4, and 5, and he says, "I thank God upon every remembrance of you, and I pray for you." And then he says, "And the New King James says, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now." But if you read other versions, that word, the Greek word koinonia there is not translated as fellowship. It's translated as partnership or participation. And that's much more accurate to the meaning, because he's telling the Philippians, look, I thank God for you, and you have this special place in my heart because you participated with me in the gospel from the first day I met you until now. And what did they do the first day he met them? Well, Lydia put him up in her house, which she obviously fed him. And then when he was ready to move on, him and Silas, you know, she probably sent him with gifts to go on. But we read fellowship, and when we think of fellowship, we think of just socialization, mingling, rather than no participation in a cause larger than the interests of the individuals.
You know, when I became a Christian, I didn't even know what the word fellowship meant.
I didn't either.
I mean, it had to be explained to me, you know.
Yeah.
And really, that's it. You know, you went over to the fellowship hall, and that's where you had cake and cookies and coffee. And
yeah.
And you know, and that was, you know, and which you know, coffee and cookies, I love. You know, don't get me wrong, but. It's not really, you know, where God's taken this whole thing.
Yeah, great stuff. Short-term teams, a lot of interesting things. And again, going back to something we previously talked about, we're one of the few countries on the planet that have resources to be able to do short-term trips to other faraway countries. And it's, I think, with that great privilege, you know, comes great responsibility to do them in a way that certainly glorifies God and really makes a difference for expanding his kingdom, you know, around the world.
Yeah, and I think that we really, really, and I think we've said this before, is that it's something that we need to steward well, steward better, and recognize not only are we a people that, you know, that's unique on this planet, you know, in our time that's able to do that, but we're a culture that's unique in the history of the earth.
Yes.
To be able to, in the history of the church, in the history of human history, to be able to travel the way we travel. I think I remember in Bible college when What's the guy's name that discovered gravity?
Oh, Isaac Newton.
Isaac Newton. Yeah. Isaac Newton, he took the Bible very literally, and he read prophecies in Daniel, and Isaac Newton was like, man, if this is real, then there's going to be a day in human history that men are going to be able to travel in at speeds in excess of 30 miles per hour.
Yes.
I've had five super bikes, and I kind of chuckle at that. I don't even get out of first gear before I hit 30. But the people in his time thought he was a doting fool for believing that humans would ever be able to travel at those speeds. But here we are, and we're able to take the gospel around the world. And I think that, the generations that have preceded us, they probably look at us now, according to Hebrews, where we have this audience, and we need to live our lives like we have this audience, and that we do well with what we've been given to steward.
Yes, I agree. And I think we will give an account for it. It's not like, you get booted out of heaven and go to hell. But I think there is, sort of the whole Bema Seat of Christ thing and rewards in the afterlife. I think we're going to be held responsible for the way we steward the resources and the privilege that we've been given.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.